This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to this Drum Network networking event. As I said in the bar, I'm Nikki McMorrow, the head of the Drum Network, and I'm really super excited to be able to introduce this event this evening with Gordon, our editor-in-chief, and of course, the world-famous Gary Vaynerchuk. But I do have to tell you a few things about what's going on first, if that's all right. That won't take long. Firstly, Gary, although he is super world-famous, he's actually very much like you, because he's an agency owner, a marketing leader, and also a member of the Drum Network. He may not be aware, but he is. As you know, the Drum Network is all about helping members to make better marketing decisions through networking and skill sharing and things like this. But did you notice some cameras? We are also doing some content creation tonight as well. So we will be recording a leadership lesson, the full chat, which will be for members only on the Drum Network. And we're also recording a shorter version, an audience with Gary Vee, which will be available on the Drum as well. So Gary will be able to share some of his agency secrets with you without spilling the beans to the rest of the industry.
I'll spill the beans. Beans are available.
Do get involved. There will be a write-up article afterwards. So on the email that you received earlier today, there's a link. That link is for you to submit your editorial comments as well. So this is a conversation as well as a show. And in a moment, once these guys get going, the screen's going to turn red, and there will be a QR code on the screen. And if you scan that, you can log in and you can actually submit your questions as well. So that screen will be up intermittently all the way through the show, so don't save your questions till the end, because we want to be inspired by them and sort of riff off those as we go along. So we've got an hour. Not long, so I'm going to get off the stage. At 7 o'clock, there'll be some networking and snacks upstairs. Gary may not be able to stay with us because he's got to go and meet a client tonight. So if you were hoping to get a selfie with Gary, then we're actually going to do that now. So what you need to do, actually, if you do want to, is stand up, turn around, and selfie. So without further ado, let me introduce our co-founder and editor-in-chief, Gordon Young, and the world-famous, and just like you, Gary Vaynerchuk. Thank you so much.
Well, welcome to the Drum Labs and this audience with Gary Vaynerchuk. He is a man who needs hardly any introduction. In fact, Gary, I have to say my kids even know who you are. And we've interviewed some industry leaders before, like Martin Sorrell, and even Martin Sorrell does not have that claim to fame.
I'll take it.
Welcome. But over the course of the, I mean, most of you here will know Gary Vaynerchuk and his background. But what we're specifically interested in is obviously his, you know, marketing experiences and marketing insights. So over the next 45 minutes or so, we'll hope to speak to him to learn about, you know, how your agency is growing, maybe get an insight into your personal philosophy, get your views of what's happening in marketing world generally, maybe get your views on what's going to happen in the future. I know you're very future focused as well. Obviously, we have an audience here as well who are made up of the Drum Network, which is an organisation for agencies, and we are really dedicated to helping improve leadership in agencies. So welcome to the audience. You're a live audience, so prove to our viewers you're alive! Welcome! Yeah, and a very enthusiastic audience. And over the course of the next 45 minutes, this audience will be sending questions to us, and we'll try and sort of put these questions to you as we go along. They're actually on the screen, you can see Gary. So if you see an interesting question, which is more interesting than the one I've asked you, feel free to just ignore what I've said. but really, the VaynerMedia is now, I believe, is one of it's the largest independent agency in the world. Is that true?
I think Wyden is probably still big. I mean, we're in the mix. I'm not sure even how that all gets calculated, but it's definitely gotten big.
Yeah, but you've obviously got about 2,000 people now.
Yeah, in VaynerX. So we obviously have a publishing company called the Gallery Media Group. We have a commerce company, a production company. So Vayner, I think, is probably 1,200 or so, but in the VaynerX network, yeah, close to 2,000.
And actually, it's quite interesting to explain the structure of that business, because obviously VaynerMedia is a major entity in its own right, but you've got a holding company, which is VaynerX. Can you just sort of explain why you've structured it that way?
You know, a lot of what this journey for me has been about was not knowing a whole lot about this great industry. And so a lot of it was instinctual. It was, you know, I started off building the company for myself, to be frank. And I still am. I think one of the things I'm most proud of is a lot of the things that we've stumbled into was based on the opening day thesis, which was, what if we built an incredibly capable contemporary marketing company that was global to run other businesses through that I was involved in? Originally, I thought I was gonna buy brands from Fortune 500 CPGs, orphan brands. Mug root beer was always the one that I wanted. I like root beer. But I knew that I had to learn Fortune 500 land. I knew I didn't know big company marketing. I knew that I knew small business marketing because I'd done that successfully. I knew that I knew Silicon Valley well. I was a very good investor in that era. But I knew that I didn't know Fortune 500 land. And I wanted to learn. And I don't really learn by reading. I learn by doing. So, you know, a lot of what I wanted to do was build a company for myself. Something that would work is how my brain worked. And so some of the stuff that we get a lot of credit for now of like being early on bringing media and creative together, well, for someone like me, that was the only way you can do internet marketing if you're gonna do it well. And so that's kind of the journey we went on. So VaynerMedia was built, media and creative together under one house, and away we went. It originally started as community management. It was literally setting up Twitter and Facebook accounts for very big brands. My brother's laptop created the NHL's Twitter account, Campbell's Soup Facebook and Twitter account, Pepsi's Twitter and Facebook account. So it's like kind of fun stories we'll tell our grandkids one day. That evolved into us believing that creative in social was gonna emerge. We took a bet. We got very lucky and fortunate that Facebook's business model changed and they created the feed instead of the wall, which completely accelerated the concept of creative and social. And then from there, what became obvious to me was that both media and creative were, in one man's humble point of view, a little too expensive for big brands to compete with what I was seeing outside of Madison Avenue. And that the cost of production and the media plans were based on potential reach, not actualized reach. And that really got us galvanized to get serious because I thought there was a better way. We saw it differently. I started to become educated on what was going on in ad land. I understood now, oh, there's a lot of holding companies, they're publicly traded, this is gonna impact a lot of their strategies, and started kind of getting my feet under me 5 or 6 years in, and that's when we got really serious, probably about 6, 7 years ago, where I was like, wow. Originally, I thought I was gonna build the agency and actually shut it down and just bring all the people that I wanted to the brands and just run a business. Now, I'm like, wait a minute, I can have my cake and eat it too. I wanna build the largest global independent agency in the world, and we'll shuffle talent between that world and things I do like VeeFriends, my Sesame Street Pokemon IP, or Empathy Wines, a direct-to-consumer wine brand that I started with two interns from VaynerMedia that we sold to Constellation. Rezzy, the restaurant app, was an original product built at VaynerMedia with VaynerMedia employees. So it's really cool like how we've got it now. And now I understand why we're so different. We've got a very different business model. And that, and in a lot of ways I do feel, you know, transparently, with all due respect, that we have our interests more aligned with our clients, because I'm trying to figure out marketing that works selfishly for me for other behaviors versus, you know, the model of trying to run a business where you are trying to do the marketing you believe in, but there's also, you know, the only business model is being a client service provider and having to worry about your revenue and margin. And so I think that's been a competitive advantage in the last decade.
It's interesting. And so did you start the agency first and then you built the holding company around it?
Or
did
yes. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. Yeah. So 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, there was an opportunity to buy a publishing company called PureWow, which was a top 5 leader in the women's lifestyle publishing game. As all of us know, the rise of Refinery 29 and BuzzFeed, we just read that BuzzFeed News shut down. BuzzFeed and Refinery 29 and Vice, and I think everyone remembers that era of publishers. I was concerned about that. I thought that that was actually, you know, I felt at that point that I knew how to be successful within the context of big holding company media and creative agencies. I was a little worried about publishers 6, 7 years ago. Like, wait a minute, they have an advantage. They're taking working media dollars and turning it into creative in a world where I felt creative was an important battleground. And so I wanted to really have a competitive arm in that race. And so I bought Pure Wow. That immediately forced us to create a holding company. We created a 137 PM, a men's lifestyle publishing arm. And then it started rolling. We started, you know, one day I woke up and said, why are we saying no to 1,000 clients a month who are all small businesses who had context of my career prior to this world? I'm like, we should probably start an agency to, because Vayner wasn't built for that. I was like, maybe I should start an, you know, kind of seems like a bad business move to say no to 1,000 people a month. I was like, why don't we start an agency for small businesses? I named it after my dad, which is a lot of fun. And I called that the Sasha Group. And so that's an agency that does the same philosophy, but has different products and services that smaller companies can afford. That became a third. Then we created a production company. I really felt weird. I still feel weird. I still think the production of videos in our industry are way too expensive. I really do. I think 30-second videos are too expensive, especially when I know what people are paying for 30-second videos in startup land and outside of our world. So we started a production company that really tries to tackle. We lose so many triple bids because we're so much less cost. Procurement doesn't think that we're doing the same thing. And I keep trying to tell them it's the same thing. So we call that Ibn No Saddam, which is Madison Ave spelled backwards. And so we've built from there. We've got commerce, we've got
innovation. I mean, my accountant tells me my business is too complicated.
Yeah, no, nobody in my world that's straight likes anything I'm doing. My CFO hates me, you know, so we'll figure it out.
That's a good one question from Uli Fidi, if I pronounce your name properly. They're saying you've invested a lot in social media platforms, you obviously know it's gonna work. Would you ever consider starting your own social media platform?
I don't think that that's what I do. It, of course, it's crossed my mind. I bought a version of one that was in the wine world called Corked 12, 13 years ago, created by a great designer named Dan Cederholm, who created Dribbble. But, you know, I have thought about some sort of blended version of a small social network that also provided like information, like was, I've called it in my mind like content as a service, so like a SaaS business, but with content that has a social network element, maybe like some sort of lightweight version of a LinkedIn, but I'm not sure I'm gonna ever cross that bridge, but I, you know, one of my main principles is to be in the maybe business. Mm-hmm. I think no is a very dangerous word, and so I don't sense that that's where I'm going, but I've done a lot of things that I didn't see coming.
Yeah. But what do you, you know, you're doing so much and, you know, the business is very much you. But within the company itself, you do have another investor. His name's Steve Ross. But do you work a lot with him on that basis or is he just a silent partner?
He invested 8-9 years ago. My brother was very young at the time. It was an opportunity to take some money off the table. It was really, my brother was in his mid-20s. It was really gonna change the course of how he could get married and live his life. And, you know, it was not something I was super enthusiastic about, to be frank, because I thought I was gonna build a big company. I was right. It's one of his best investments ever. But it mattered to me to do right by my brother. You know, I wanna buy the New York Jets football team. He owned the Dolphins. I thought that was funny. I've never had one. They don't even have his group. They don't even have a board seat. We don't even do budget with them. I don't know what the most extreme version of a silent partner is, but which is exactly the way we wrote up the contract.
Yeah, but do you think that's part of your, I mean, if you're sort of advising other people how to go their, you know, the sort of media com brand business, do you think it's, you know, what are your views on ownership? When would you sort of suggest people should get partnerships or should get help? Or do you believe it's better to, you know, keep the equity and build it yourself?
I think if you're capable, you build the equity and keep it yourself. I think everyone's on their own personal journey. I think that this industry desperately needs many more independent agencies at scale. I think it would make the industry so much happier and healthier. That's not a dig at the holding companies. I think the holding companies have done a remarkable business job over the last 40 years. I think it's out of balance. I think 4 to 5 massive global companies that were independent and not publicly traded and not part of the current form of holding companies would be really healthy for the industry. And so, of course, I see the white space. I'm currently building one. It's going to end up being a very, very, very large business. And I think that there are many young women and men, and not only young, very many men and women in this industry that are capable of starting companies and working for 20, 30, 40 years and building a massive independent agency, because I think there's a white space. I think clients are looking for alternatives. But it needs to be big, right? The big companies need you to be global. And so if someone's got the talent, you stay independent forever. The buyout deals are not good if you're good.
Yeah.
If you're good, the buyout deals that you get from a holding company are bad deals. They make you finance yourself. But most people get tired and most people are scared. Most people have a nice agency and they say to themselves, if I lose my two biggest clients, I got nothing. And so this cash out, and they get, it's a tough business. We all know that. So people get burned out. I'm very empathetic to why all these agencies have sold over the last three decades. But to answer your question, if you're good enough, you never sell.
Yeah, you never sell. That's interesting. I mean, obviously, because you just mentioned your dream is to buy the Jets. It's going to be probably
a lot of money.
billions, isn't it? Yeah, 10 billion.
Well, you know, to me, if I can build a big enough company, I can buy it with the distributions of the profits over 5 years. Why would I sell?
Yeah. And so what would be your long-term, you know, if you were to talk about an exit venture, would you look at an IPO or would you just, or is this going to be a dull to last?
I don't think I'm capable of being a publicly traded CEO. I just don't want to be accountable to anybody. I'd rather lose out on my dream of buying the Jets than to go IPO. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to build a big enough business that kicks enough profit, and then I'm going to have to invest that money wisely to give myself a chance.
Yeah.
But to me, I'd rather be happy in my freedom day to day as a businessman and miss out on this childhood goal I had than to compromise my happiness truth be told, gun to head, if the moment comes in 20 years and there's a quick little, I can sell it, and then I can buy the Jets, that's something I'm going to have to really talk about. The problem is there's so many videos of me publicly telling all my employees that the day I sell, no matter what I say, you should all resign because I'm full of shit. So that would be like maybe not interesting for someone to buy. You know. So
that's very unusual, isn't it? Because any business owner, the question you always get asked is, you know, what is your exit plan?
Mine's death. For real. I won't sell it unless truly the Jets thing kind of plays out a certain way. But otherwise, I'm going to die.
Yeah. So, talking about dying, I mean, I have to say, looking at your schedule, that would kill me. If you Google, how many hours a night do you actually sleep?
Oh, I sleep. I'm not functional, I do it unfortunately often enough, but not as much as people think. I sleep 6, 7, or 8 hours a night. I'm a huge fan of sleep. I think I'm incredibly misbranded on this, even though my words have been consistent for 10 years on this. To me, it's about being effective when you're awake. To me, I don't think people should work hard if they don't like what they do. To me, this is you work hard when you like it. I think that, unfortunately, there's been a couple viral articles written about me, which the people that have written them have come back and been very kind to me over time, that I think when people think I don't sleep or I think you gotta work, I'm always confused. I'm not confused. I know my energy. I'm self-aware, I get it. But to me, sleep is an enormous part of my partnership with my happiness and success. I'm always fighting for 7. I'm very, very, very functional at 6. Oh boy, will I be pumped if I can sneak in an 8. And I just think that, for example, one thing that kills agencies, mine included, meetings. Meetings are a fucking disaster. There's 12 people in a room when it only needed 5. It's an hour and a half and it could have been done in 20. And so those are the things I think about, which is it's not that I want people to work more. It's not that I don't want people to sleep. It's that I think that there's incredible ways to be dramatically more effective and efficient if we did the thing that needs to be done versus philosophical.
Yeah, so how do you control that then?
I haven't figured it out.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I've spoken about it at length.
Because I'm speaking to some of your team, and you're saying, like, you know, 5-minute meeting, you'll do it.
I'm sorry, I've figured it out for me. Yeah. You know, I'm killing it. I do 30, 15-minute meetings a day. Like, I've really figured it out for me. For the company, I haven't been able to get to the level of efficiency that I think we should be at, given that I'm the CEO and that's the culture. But, you know, for me, it's been great. Like, and honestly, it's been really rewarding. I've gotten a lot of emails, specifically in the last year, of they were so taken aback, or even one guy wrote me the other day, he's like, I was appalled when I only got 15 minutes for our meeting. He goes, until I realized we were done at 11 meetings, and now I do them too. And so, like, you know, for a lot of us, you know, I get sad when people feel burned out or tired or like overwhelmed. And a lot of times I'm like, look, this is a in a very compassionate way, I'm like, this is a self-inflicting wound. Your insecurity makes you show up to every meeting because you don't want to miss out, thus not giving you time to do the work. Like, maybe you should pick some meetings that you don't need to be in, and maybe somebody will take some notes. Or a lot of people's insecurities create behaviors that lead to a lot of troubles.
Yeah. I mean, and I agree, but the other thing in terms of your time management, when you look at how much social media put out, you do obviously a daily video, you're one of the most prolific people I've ever met in terms of content.
Yes.
So how do you manage a business at the same time as managing your personal branding?
Because I created infrastructure, right? My team's filming this video right now. If you look very carefully at my content, I don't make content. I'm being filmed, and then we post-produce it. To your point, like, we run a lot of analytics on this. I am one of truly the most prolific output producers in the world. I'm producing on every platform. But it's because I have a 25-person full-time team on the production of it. First, that started with 7 years of just me doing it myself. Then I got to a place where it built where I could afford one person in 2014, and I kept building and building and building. But I don't produce content. I live my life as an operator. There's things that I do as an operator like this that are great for me in the industry, and that will be filmed and then it's caught, but I'm not producing content.
Yeah.
I'm posting the content. We have a full workflow in WhatsApp. Like, I'm posting my, right now you haven't seen Instagram from me for the last 5 hours because I've been busy, so Daisy's driving me crazy and putting me everywhere and I gotta be this and that and this, and I'm like, I'm sorry, Daisy. Yeah. And like, you know, but once I get off with this and I transition, only because I was in the tube downstairs, I didn't have Wi-Fi, but if we were in a taxi cab, I would have done it in that downtime. So I'm still a practitioner of the craft. The copy on social media creative is something this industry desperately does not understand. What's so fun about the life I'm living is, as I've become more a historian of the ad industry over the last 100 years, VaynerMedia is just doing the same thing in just different distribution form. A lot of our model is built on what actually worked in the 50s, 60s, and 70s with local newspaper, local radio, you know, like media and creative together. It's funny, I'm like, whoa, my God, actually what we do was done for 40, 50, 60 years. It was only the early 90s when things started to really change in this industry, separation, this, that. So it's kind of been very romantic and exciting to me that I feel like, huh, we're looked at this enigma or different or this, and I'm like, actually, I have a funny feeling we're doing it the way it was intended to be done.
Yeah, I know, but then the other interesting thing is the business, you know, your personal brand is such a big part of what you do. A question has come in, someone said, is a founder-led agency the way to success? I suppose what they're really saying, can others learn from how you built your agency? Would you suggest other people wanting to build a successful marketing business should look at the personalities? And
for the people in this business, this will probably land with you because you probably know. I would argue the Gary Vee of it all has not done me any favors with VaynerMedia. I would argue that Gary Vaynerchuk, me the actual businessman and operator, has been a way bigger impact on VaynerMedia doing well than Gary Vee. This industry wasn't overly warm and welcoming to the concepts coming out of my mouth over the last decade. You know, and I actually respect that. Why? I was already trained for that. It was called my 15 years in the wine business. The opinions and thoughts I had about democratizing wine were met very negatively by the wine business. My point of view that everyone here should drink what they like and explore different things instead of being dictated what they should drink was a big passion I had that was incredibly not well accepted in the wine business. my belief that wine was too intimidating and people were overthinking it and we needed to humanize it was, believe it or not, incredibly ridiculed in the early days of my career because I was not respectful to the wine. Then I got into the ad world and I was not respectful to the work. I have bet my career and my professional life on caring about the humans in mass versus the industry that pretends to care about the humans in mass.
Yeah, it's interesting. But what would you think, being the business is such a big part of what you're doing, in fact, Julie Cohen just asked this question, is it good, you know, it's quite morbid really. But she's saying, obviously, the you know, this business is you. But how important is legacy? You know, if you're not gonna sell a business on,
legacy is the only thing I'm trading on here. Mm-hmm. If I was trading on money, we would sell television and programmatic.
Yeah,
we've left an extraordinary amount of money on the table the last 13 years. I'm only doing this model to be historically correct. Every agency in advertising in 15 years will look a lot more like us than us looking like the agencies today.
Yeah, another big the other issue is you're so busy because I did actually enjoy your book 12 and a half.
Thank you.
Talked about the emotional attributes of being a successful business, but one of the key things you spoke about was patience.
Yes,
and you strike me as the least patient person I've ever met in terms of
that's because I think patience is misunderstood. Mm-hmm. I'm productive, I'm not complacent, but I'm uncomfortably patient. I'm very fast in the micro, but very slow in the macro. And so, you know, for example, even our global expansion, we've had 4 to 5 substantial moments in the history of our agency where Fortune 50 companies have walked directly into my office and said, if you open these offices in the Middle East and Africa and Brazil tomorrow, and we don't even care if you go JV with local markets, we will give you this $80 million in fee, which at one time was double our revenue. And we passed, because I knew that we wouldn't be able to pull it off. That it was gonna get sloppy, that my culture was gonna get ruined. I call that patience. You know, and so I'm busy and productive on a day-to-day basis, but on a year-to-year basis, the way I strategize to build this business has been very patient. I believe in patience so much. I think people are so quick to get the money, get the accolades, prove to somebody that hurt their feelings along the way that they made it and take that, you know? And so, you know, yeah, I'm a big fan of patience. I spent the first 12 and a half years of my career building my father's liquor store business for him, never getting paid more than $100,000 a year. And I built his business from $3 to $75 million, and at 34 years old, started VaynerMedia in Buddy Media's conference room because I had no money to pay for rent. So when I tell kids be patient, I spent the first 12 years of my, you know how good those 12 years of your career are in your 20s and early 30s, especially when you got it like me? Those are profound years where you can work all the time and all this. And I deployed unreal patience on an ideology that mattered to me, which was I wanted to give back to my parents for what they gave to me. And so, I mean, I didn't even start my career until I was 34.
Yeah, that's really good. I must encourage my son to build my business. Talk about that later. What I quite enjoyed about your book is obviously, you know, is trying to look at the emotional traits. And in fact, I think Cyrielle, I'm getting hope pronouncing it properly, asked a question along those lines. How much does company culture impact on your success? And how do you manage to keep a strong culture while growing the business?
Oh, sure, the biggest reason I feel like we're gonna win is we have better company culture than who we're competing with. And not because we're better people, though maybe that is it. A lot of it has to do with we have an enormous advantage. When you are independent, you can do what I did do in 2016, 17, and 18, which is make no profit. And when you're a publicly traded company and part of a holding network, I would have been fired by delivering no profit. So I don't, you know, it's funny, I have very little judgment or negative points of view on the holding company model. I'm too empathetic. I'm a businessman, I understand. But company culture's the whole thing. It's the punchline. Our longevity. Raisa, how long have you been at Vayner?
11 years.
Ben?
8 years.
you know, we're a 13-year company and we have like ungodly amounts of employees that have been at the company for 8, 9, 10, 11 years. That's unheard of in this industry. We have hundreds of people that have been here 5, 6, 7 years. That's unheard of.
Yeah. What's the secret sauce? I mean, how do you...
Two things. One, make less money. Value the humans over the P&L. So when we lose a client, you don't fire people because they were on it. You like take less profit that year. That's unheard of in this fucking industry. Number two, fire people. Let me explain that part. The thing that we've done very well that has really gained a lot of trust over the years is I fire people that are great at their job and make us lots of money because they're not nice. You want to build company culture? Fire the asshole that's bringing in revenue and watch how fast people start to trust you. Ah, but most people don't do that. Mm-hmm. Most people look the other way if a creative director can win a lot of pitches. Most people look the other way. Don't look the other way.
Mm-hmm. Good. I'll brief your HR department. But the other, I mean, talking of less money, I mean, obviously we've been touching BuzzFeed News and there's a bit of a sort of economic chilly wind blowing to the market at the moment. However, you seem to be growing.
Well, that's because we're a price leader. Mm-hmm. You know, we're a better priced agency because we make. You know, the dirty secret of this industry is creative agencies are consultants. It's a real brain twist. I didn't even realize it until not too long ago. I was like, wait a minute. Every creative AOR sells decks. You have to outsource the production. And this was like, it hit me. You know, I was, you know, I've had my point of views. I've been in the business. It just hit me one day. I was like, maybe that's like what's like at the crux of this is that the ideas are too expensive. And so for us, we give you the ideas, but we also produce creative and produce output every day at scale, which is a requirement in the consumer journey. Because I think the industry has not come to grips with a very significant truth, which is the lower funnel, social, is actually the upper funnel. That brand is now being built in social in a significant way, for real. And this industry will hold on to that not being true as long as humanly possible. But I think as brands now are trying to not waste money, people are gonna start losing market share to companies that have better pricing models and are able to produce creative in a much more thoughtful way. And I think that's gonna rear its head quite a bit over the next half decade.
Yeah, well, we'll also talk about sort of building brands and the, you know, the work itself. I mean, Adam Klein's got a question. He wants to know, what piece of work is VaynerMedia most proud of?
Any piece of work that actually achieved the goal at hand, right? So the pre-work to killing Mr. Peanut on Planters is work I'm incredibly proud of. Because as we did the social creative that gave us the consumer insights that proved to us that nobody cared about Mr. Peanut anymore in America, that led to the brief, that led to the creative idea of killing him, while we were going through that journey day in and day out in our social creative, that creative itself was being consumed so much that it created much more consideration and purchase. And after 12 years of a brand declining, see, what's very unusual about Vayner is we don't trade on the same proxies that the industry does. On the media side, we don't believe the MMAs. We don't believe the MMMs. We don't believe the brand lift studies. On the creative side, we don't believe in the headlines or the awards as the justifier. We believe in the business results because that's what advertising's supposed to do. So the work I'm most proud of is the work that has actually driven business. When Planters Peanuts is declining for 12 years in a row and then changes its agency from McGarry Bowen to Vayner, and in 6 months, the business starts to grow, and at the end of the year, it's had a double-digit growth year for the first time in 13 years, I'm extremely proud. And we've done that over and over and over to the point now where maybe not the industry, like when I walk through Cannes in a couple weeks, I don't think people are like, wait a minute, they're on, but boy, in the trenches of the CEOs and CFOs of the biggest brands in the world, this conversation is looming. And it's helping us grow quite a bit.
Yeah. So you're basically trading on effectiveness and trading price. But Georgina Elliott has asked, what do you, because obviously we are in a bit of an economic downturn at the moment. Hopefully it's not going to be, hopefully it'll be short lived. But she's saying, what do you regard as the biggest threat to your business?
My health is real, That's it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean that, thank you, Raisa. We have unlimited threats. AI in a decade after we're done figuring out trademark and copyright issues, we'll be able to create creative at a scale that we could never compete with. It'll be accessible to everyone. There's an extraordinary amount of young talent that is 18, 19, 20, and 21 that think nothing I say is profound. They think it's mundane, meaning they're like, of course. And so all of those individuals will be worthy competitors. If a coconut falls on my head and changes my personality and allows me to take my eye off the ball, that could be bad.
Mm-hmm. And what about the industry as a whole? What do you think are the major sort of opportunities and threats to the industry as a whole?
Oh, the industry has got a lot of threats. We have to come to grips with this conversation. Creative's too expensive. Media is trading on potential reach, not actualized reach. Activist investors are super pissed off about how much money is being wasted on marketing, and so they're going to come in and buy the Procter & Gamble's and the Pepsi's and and change the way marketing is done.
Do you think they've been criticized for being maybe basically too woke, I suppose, for want of a better word, haven't they? They're focusing on purpose rather than building shareholder value. Do you think that's fair?
No, I think building on purpose has the chance to create, I think brands being thoughtful about what consumers care about is a good ideal. I think the reason brands are in trouble is they're wasting too much money on potential reach and too much money on creative. Marketing is not effective in our industry. We have to wrap our heads around that. The market share that small brands that are VC backed, that are picking up on an everyday basis on the biggest brands in the world, is a real conversation that's going to really become pressure filled over the next decade. There's just a lot of pressure right now. Small brands are catching up because distribution changed, marketing has changed, and this industry as a whole, the delusion that will go on in the south of France in 6 weeks is a problem. Mm-hmm. Do you know that chief creative officers around the world think they're famous?
Mm-hmm. Not famous to you.
Yeah, but forget about me. No bullshit. Mm-hmm. I walk around there and these people think people know who they are. People definitely don't know who they are. Even scarier, people don't know their work. People don't know their work.
Yeah.
Listen, I think this industry is filled with brilliant strategists and creatives who the industry itself sucks out their creativity over time because they make them conform into distribution models that make no sense today. So, I think the industry is very vulnerable. And by the way, the proof is in the pudding. You have companies like me that came out of nowhere doing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. You have in-housing happening at super scale. There's a reason this shit's happening.
Yeah.
It's called the reverse of what's working for us. Shit's too expensive and it's not effective enough.
Yeah, and what's driving that?
And by the way, I just want everybody to hear this, but the principles stay the same. For example, the creative is the variable of success. Ideas and creativity are the punchline of this whole thing. The process of how we get to those ideas is the problem with our industry. It should not take us 9 months to come up with a 30-second video that costs hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars to then be distributed for millions of dollars through a fucking television commercial. It is 2023. Enough. And then matching luggage on programmatic digital, and then the occasional half-assed social media post, this industry is broken, mm-hmm. with all due respect.
Yeah, yeah, and obviously social is redefining it.
And by the way, I have no emotion towards social. Social just happens to be the distribution platform right now where there's underpriced attention and opportunity. If I was sitting here 20 years ago, I'd be yelling about Google AdWords and email. This is just about where is the consumer's attention. And by the way, I think the Super Bowl ad is the best to buy in advertising. That is an $8 million media buy on a 30-second video. Best buy in advertising because it's actually consumed, This is, I think outdoor billboards are great when you can buy them remnant in between two big buys and you don't have to pay $40,000 a month for it. You can buy it for $2,000. I think drive time radio with some of its pricing today is a very interesting place to buy. I think Spotify's read only ad is remarkable. And I think you can waste all your money on social media if you don't do it well. This is not blanket statements. This is, do you know where the underpriced attention of the consumer is? And then do you know the craft of making the creative to fill it? The problem is television's overpriced. And by the way, the television that this industry holds so near and dear is gone in a decade. Streaming and connected TV and fast channels are 5 minutes away from tearing it all down. So what are we gonna do then? We gonna buy upfronts on biddable digital television? Like, it's ludicrous. We have to come to grips. Listen, I don't care. I prefer no one comes to grips with anything I'm saying here. Back to earlier, before we started with the beans, everything I'm saying will come true. I'm thrilled if everyone still holds on to the past. It's better for me personally. I just would like to see this industry happier and better. There's so many people sitting at their desks knowing what I'm saying is true, working on work that's soulless. That's not fun. That's not good for anyone. It's not good for anyone. I would much rather have 6 or 7 real VaynerMedia competitors. I really would. I'd be thrilled because we're gonna get ours. We're good enough. I just think a lot of people in our industry would be happier. This is not a happy industry. It is not. It's because culture's not right because every company's an actual bank and the second they lose a client, everyone gets fired and everyone knows it. It's not happy because creativity is getting suppressed because everyone knows a 30-second video that is a commercial is not creativity in 2023. We need people to talk about this, not just me. I love the people I've met in this industry. I like my competitors that yell at me at Cannes.
Are you going to Cannes this year?
Of course.
Yeah.
It's business development. Mm-hmm. But I have no idea who won anything or what anything is, what a Grand Prix is or a Platinum. I have no fucking clue.
You guys have won before.
We've won tons and my employees are mad at me because I don't acknowledge it because I don't think it's the right thing to acknowledge. I really don't. Mm. Now, I've learned to not completely demonize it because I do want creatives that grew up in ad school. Like, I get it. But I don't want us to take the eye off the ball. Like, do you know that the majority of the winners last year's businesses were down? Mm-hmm. That's a problem. This is the advertising business. Yeah. The people winning the biggest awards are winning awards for marketing on businesses that are declining. That's bad.
Yeah, and if agencies are going to shift the dial quickly, where should they be focusing their attention?
Creative and social.
Yeah.
Every creative agency of record in the world that matters, the Drogas, the Wydens, all these incredible shops, 72 and Sunny, every one of them grossly disrespects creative and social. If they even do it, it's matching luggage to the above the line work and it's going to be their demise.
Yeah, and what do you think is the most exciting trend in social in terms of the platforms emerging? What's next?
That the algorithms are so strong, they're giving you consumer insights to make your marketing even better when you do good marketing.
Yeah. And the one that does that best of all really is TikTok, isn't it?
100%.
And do you think TikTok could be banned in the US or?
That's way above my pay grade.
Yeah. Should it be? I mean, do you think that sort of the fears are sort
I, of over? Yeah, I mean, yeah. Every normal human I talk to, when they have because I do the content I do, I'm like literally walking in the streets of New York and people are coming up to me and be like, TikTok. I'm like, whoa. I'm like. They're like, it should be banned. I'm like, fine. Like, ban it. I don't give a shit. To me, that means a lot of attention is going to go somewhere else and I'll be ready for that attention. You can ban all of social media. That would be great for me because that's a lot of attention that would have to recalibrate somewhere. And our biggest strength is knowing where the attention's going. So, I don't really have a horse in the social media race. I have a horse in actual consumer behavior. Actual, not the ideology that we'd like it to be based on the way we built our businesses. And so, should it? I don't know. If I was on the committee that investigates it and could see clear violations that are super scary, I'm sure it's worth a debate. I'm just really struggling to figure out what China's gonna do with the things I look on with TikTok.
Yeah,
China, on the record, China can have everything I do.
Yeah, and obviously it's the thing with TikTok, it's just...
I'm being dead serious, by the way. I think privacy is wildly misunderstood. I believe in privacy and all that, but like, sometimes people just get into ideology. Like, okay, China's not gonna manipulate me with the feed. Mm-hmm. People are not being accountable to their bad behavior and they like to blame social media for it.
Yeah, there's also so many businesses being built through TikTok that they are...
Of course.
It'd be pretty catastrophic because, for short-term anyway.
Yeah, but they'll go to other platforms. Like, the attention's not, like, it's not like TikTok gets banned and then everybody wakes up who consumed TikTok and said, let me go buy a newspaper.
but talking about the other area which has been interesting is how politics is using social, isn't it?
Well, this is what drives me fucking crazy. I sit down the last 5 years with CEOs and CMOs of the biggest companies in the world. We sit down for a 2 hour, 1 hour, 45 minute training. For the last 6 years, the first 15 minutes, that leader is talking to me about how social media is so fucking powerful and the American democracy and this should be banned and fucking this should go to jail and we need to, it's the most powerful thing and we get through that and then we segue and then they transition and tell me why they can't sell makeup on social. Like, they literally sit there for 15 or 20 minutes and talk about the extreme overwhelming power and effectiveness of social media and why it should be regulated. And then we switch into business and they talk about why they don't know what the ROI is compared to television. It's the most laughable, most ludicrous conversations I have, and I used to have them a lot. I do think post-COVID, the conversation has changed. I'm really happy. I think people are having more thoughtful conversations. Not that I think the industry has figured out how important brand building and social is, but we've definitely seen a movement. I don't have as silly of conversations anymore. But of course, every politician that's winning every race is the one who's winning on social. It's where the attention of the consumer is, like it or not. By the way, I don't like it. I wish this was 1965. I would make my nice little TV commercial, run a little radio, do some print, leave at 5 o'clock, get a cocktail. Yeah.
Come on, famous creative director.
Yeah, I would be crushing it. it's just not 1965.
But maybe as we sort of running out of time, maybe just a couple more questions.
Please.
From the audience. Anonymous, I hope that's been properly asked, how are you navigating media buying in social longer term in a world where these dollars are less effective due to the deprecation of third-party cookies, etc.?
That's a great question. So, you know, what's so funny was social media buying was so effective pre-iOS 14.5, yet everyone said it wasn't. Now everyone's like, what are you doing now that it's not? And I laugh. I'm like, they're like, you don't have cookies now. I'm like, you mean like television? You mean like all the digital bullshit that people buy in the black boxes that the agencies have created to maximize their margin? What are we doing? We're doing smart business. We're running unlimited social creative that is smart. No happy Tuesday. No picture and blah, blah. Like the mailing it in of social media creative that this industry does is laughable. We do strategic creative on social that takes into effect the platforms, the way the algorithms work, culture, the whole nine. When we then have virality or over-indexing on both quant and qual, we then run paid performance against creative that we know is effective. And so we've had incredible effectiveness in a post-iOS 14.5 because creative is the variable of success. This is what I keep trying to tell my creative friends. I'm like, friends, it's better than it's ever been. Creative's getting more and more and more important. It's just the production value doesn't mean it's good creative. The cost of it doesn't mean it's good creative. The ideology of the last 70 years doesn't mean it's good creative. In a form that looks like a commercial, definitely means it's not a good piece of creative. Yet we hold on to that. So for us, our social media spend and allocation from our clients is growing, but that's because we have such a commitment to creative.
That's good. And another good question, actually, which always brings us full circle. Again, it's from Adam Klein. Second question from Adam.
Thank you, Adam.
Yeah, and this does bring a full circle slightly. How do you navigate the owner-founder syndrome where clients want to buy you, but you don't necessarily have the time?
I've never sold me from day one.
Mm-hmm.
I've been very upfront with clients from the day we started this company. This is VaynerMedia. I don't do consulting. This is my agency. I'm the CEO. I'm thrilled to join meetings. I'm in the dirt. I'm very proud that I'm good at the craft that my agency sells. It's a huge advantage for me that I really sense in the marketplace. The thing we do for a living, creative and media, in social, predominantly going up the ladder. We do plenty of creative AOR work and media AOR work as well. But the craft, I'm a practitioner of. Right, I'm not an accountant. Right, I'm not a CFO.
Yeah, but you still need to meet the clients. Obviously, heading off in the moment to see a client. And
yeah, I love meeting clients, but I'm incredibly upfront. Like, I don't manage this account. I'm not doing the work. I'm bat phone for all my clients. But I think the industry would be stunned how little interaction I have with clients day to day.
Yeah.
You know, I love it. I love being in the work. But I'm the CEO of VaynerMedia. Like.
Yeah. And another thing to sort of get again, you know, you're the CEO of VaynerMedia, you're sort of running the business, obviously that's what you love doing. Your dream is to buy the Jets, but you said in your other big plan was to sort of buy brands.
Yes.
And then flip them.
Yes.
What brands would you look at?
Well, Mug Root Beer, if you're listening, Pepsi, is always a dream of mine. I really like root beer. I don't know, you know, I think that will come in time.
Well, what about Tupperware? That'd be a good one.
Mug root beer.
Tupperware.
What's up? Tupperware. What's the best root beer?
No, Tupperware, the brand.
Oh, the Tupperware, yeah.
Yeah.
That was up. I know that was available.
It's going cheap.
I know that was available. So it's really interesting. One of the other reasons I have a lot of confidence in our model is many of the private equity firms, the biggest ones in the world, and hedge funds are incredibly active with me on the conversation of marketing. And so I'm aware of a lot of these deals that are brewing out there. Yeah, I just don't like Tupperware.
Mm-hmm, yeah. But what would your criteria be? You look for
something. A nostalgic brand. Like what's going on with Crocs right now, I love that story. Like that's always gets me going. Lacoste years ago, if you all remember, right? Like show me a brand that once crushed, has been dormant for 20 years, and I'll show you something I'm genuinely interested in. I tried to buy animal crackers from Mondelez a decade ago. I had such a good concept. It actually became VeeFriends. My concept with animal crackers was to actually build on the characters, reformulate the cookies to be healthier on trend, and really build up the elephant and the lion, which is ironic. I haven't thought about that in a while, but that's what ended up happening with when I had a chance with NFTs and create intellectual property. I went right to that same place. I thought, that's like, those kind of brands really get me going. Show me, you know, Jolly Green Giant. You know, I'm very grounded. It's why I think mascots is still one of the biggest misses in our industry. I think we should be doing a lot more mascot work. I think we kind of got fancy and thought that that was like a model that's not as good, but the IP value is tremendous. I can mention 20 mascots of brands right now and people are gonna feel something. I can mention 40,000 commercials that were made that nobody's ever heard of. Right, so something to think about.
Yeah, and do you think other agencies should replicate this? Say rather, you know, we're building our own business, now our skills are transferable, maybe we should actually own the IP rather than just work for clients.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you can, you should. I mean, it's a better business model, but I mean, I think, the thing with our industry is that predominantly any industry, any agency of meaningful scale is now part of a publicly traded company, and it's gonna be hard to do that business model when you have to maximize profit for Wall Street stock price.
Yeah, and we're just about out of time, but maybe sort of, I'm just wondering what the last question should be. we'll go for a very generic one. Two questions, what would you say is your biggest regret so far, and what do you say is your biggest triumph?
My biggest regret is that only in the last 2 or 3 years have I become wildly aware that candor was a huge weakness of mine, which is wild because in this setting and this format, when I'm just speaking to the industry or to the world, my candor is incredible. But when I'm talking to an individual human, especially one that works for me and I care for, I'm really struggled with delivering bad news or candor. And my regret is that Vayner is 13 years old and there are a dozen or two or three individuals who do not have a good taste in their mouth about me. When people judge me for, because I'm obviously known now and they don't know me, I can only be so hurt by that. I'm too empathetic to why they, you know, when a competitor of mine's like, he's bad, I'm like, no shit. I hate Tom Brady too. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like I get that concept, but realizing that candor has been a struggle for me, and kind of, you know, really realizing how big of a deal that was, and rebranding it to kind candor.
Yeah, not tough love.
Not tough love, kind candor. Because I think people use candor as an excuse to be cruel, as an excuse to manipulate, as an excuse to like zing people. So I always demonized it. But realizing that candor was a weakness, and that there are some people who never were really warned enough or talked to enough or managed up enough, and then were surprised by their firing because of my inability to be candorous, is my greatest disappointment. My greatest triumph is that on the reverse, 90%, 87%, 91% of the interactions that humans have had with our organization have incredible tastes in their mouth, are still in the company, have fondness. I get incredible joy of how quickly people try to come back to VaynerMedia after leaving us to go somewhere else. Not because I'm like, ha ha ha, like more just like we're doing it right if this many people are doing that. I think we are going to build the single most successful agency of all time, and we're gonna do it by being kind to each other, which is unfortunately a rarity in this industry.
That's great. Well, and that's maybe a very good note to end on.
Yes, cheers.
Gary, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I wanna answer Mark D's question. How do you strip the cost out of your video production? By not hiring as many expensive people as possible and then selling to the client the multiple of their fee and actually making the video at the lowest possible cost you can with great talent. The industry is built on having high salary individuals and then billing them back out to clients on a multiple against that high salary. It's not, the agenda is not the quality and price against that quality work. The agenda is to maximize your revenue based on multiplying the hourly cost against the people. Almost every agency is built like an upside down triangle. Put as many senior people on the business as possible so you can sell a multiple against it. We build almost everything like a Christmas tree or a triangle. Put very capable, in the trenches senior people that can lead an incredible team that will cost you less, and then you can produce more and you can produce better at a lower cost. That's how.
That's great.
Thank
you,
sir.
Any more questions? Want to answer? You got time?
That we did. You know, I guess I'll say this and then I should probably go. I love this industry. I'm an incredibly proud member of it. I'm very honored. I'm aware that I quote unquote see it different. That doesn't come from a place of audacity or disrespect. It comes actually from a place that's reverse. 5 years ago at Cannes, somebody came up to me at 2 o'clock in the morning after drinking way too much rosé and started to berate me in the middle of the street and started yelling, "You don't care about the work. You don't care about the work. You don't care about the work." And after the fourth time, I stopped and I said, "My friend," I said, "brother, I'm the only one that cares about the work." And it stopped him, and he's like, and I was like trying to explain to him, I'm obsessed with creativity. I am creative. If you look at my career, I am creative. I think that we've defined creativity in this industry in a very poor way. I do not believe 30-second videos that look like commercial are creative in 2023. I'm trying to liberate the remarkable talent of this industry to actually become creative again. And so I just want to say thank you to all the people that, you know, are in this industry. I love being part of it, but like I encourage us to have different conversations, because the banks that run this industry have sucked creatively directly out of it. Thank you.
That's great.
Hey everybody, VCon is quickly coming here, May 18th to the 20th in Indianapolis. Go to vcon.co, vcon.co for details. You will not want to miss it.